just joining us, welcome to the show. It is 9-11 here on a Tuesday morning after the long weekend. Hope it was a good long weekend for you. That was, in reverse order, Mitch Marner of the Maple Leafs hoping for a bounce-back game this afternoon versus Columbus Blue Jackets in Game 2. Claude Julien talking about the outstanding performance of Carey Price for a second straight game. Unfortunately, this time for Montreal, not quite good enough as Pittsburgh wins 3-1 to even the series at a game apiece. And Connor McDavid, yeah, the hat's completely unnecessary.
No.
Just drop the puck so I can get a fourth goal,
please.
He had a hat trick in Edmonton's 6-3 win over Chicago.
Well, and the lady from the league, I guess, throwing it on. And you're watching the broadcast here, and most for the most part, presentation, hockey, I've been fine with. Generic interview guy in between periods with the player that looks like he's being held hostage is also one of the stranger things, right? Yeah.
That blink feels, twice well, if you need a release.
It feels like either they're looking like the person like, are you really asking me that? Or I guess they're just looking into a camera because they can't see anybody.
It's a total disembodied thing, right? It's exactly what they're doing. They're in this empty hallway. They're staring into a camera. This voice is coming from a speaker. Like the whole thing is just,
That person's name tag just says league office because that's what he sounds like. Exactly. Sounds like somebody that works at the league office.
Indeed. All right. Well, we are 3 days into it. 16 games. We've got already an elimination game tonight with the New York Rangers down 2-0 to Carolina. We've got the other three series all 1-1. Continuation of the other four series today. And of course, the round robin games continue as well, they kind of run in conjunction. So lots of hockey going on. Six more games today to talk about what we saw on the weekend and to look ahead. We welcome former Dallas head coach Jim Montgomery, official friend of the show, joining us here on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Jim?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Good to have friends.
Yeah, friends in low places. Absolutely. How much hockey did you watch on the weekend?
I've watched quite a bit. Just the late games are the only ones that I'm not staying up for.
Monty, did it end up being more than you expected, or was it just kind of a, hey, I want to get in and kind of do a cross-section of the entire, just see what it looks like?
Simmer, you mean the games I've been watching?
Well, no, but overall, like when you first went into this, did you really think, you know what, I'm going to watch every single game, or was it just kind of a wait and see that I'm going to tune in and then see how interested I am to watch it?
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest, I didn't really watch much after I was let go. I didn't really watch much hockey. I had more important things to do, but also just didn't have much interest. But with this long layoff and this starting up again, I've wanted to watch every game. I'm just got the juices flowing, watching, seeing what teams are doing, seeing what coaches are doing, and then not being able to watch. I watch a period of the last game that starts, and then I usually go to bed.
So you would have had a chance to see all or some of the 24 teams. You mentioned you watch it with a discerning eye as a coach in the league. Who, in terms of players or what teams are doing, what have you kind of twigged onto already that's either surprised you or you're pleasantly surprised by?
Well, the biggest thing I've noticed is the play-in games. The teams that are trying to qualify for the what we all know is the true Stanley Cup playoff format are playing with much more urgency than the round-robin games are. I do not think Boston, St. Louis, even the Washington-Tampa game yesterday, it looked like a January game. It didn't look like what you're seeing, the emotion and urgency you saw from. I was very impressed with Game 1. Of Minivan. I thought Van played well. I just thought Mini was just on it. They were playing to, you know, I think Dean Evason's done a great job getting that team to own what he thinks their identity should be. I also, teams that are playing with emotion identity are having the most success. The Islanders, Mini, Carolina, Columbus. And I've noticed a lot of penalties, more so than what we're used to in the playoffs. And I just think that's players and refs aren't in game and regular season form. Sticks are very careless sticks a lot. You see a lot of high sticking, a lot of reaching in at the body and hands, and then a lot of needless trips because of poor angles by players. And then, you know, the coach's perspective, or to your point about the players that have been really impactful, to me, you know, having been in the West, I haven't been able to watch and discern the East as much. And you know, Werenski and Jones, to me, are by far the most dominant pairing in hockey. I thought the Leafs played a good game, but I thought those guys were really able to shut down and negate a lot of quality opportunities by some really incredibly talented forwards on the Leafs side. And by no means do I think that series is going long. And then just McDavid's response yesterday, you know, I don't think he was happy with his team or his own performance probably in game one. And boy, you see the superstar qualities come out.
If you're sitting there, Monty, and you're the big four and you're kind of going through the motions, I know it's going to be best of seven, but are you nervous how you're prepping for the first round of the playoffs versus the teams that are playing the real play-in games?
Absolutely. I you know, as from a coach, you know, you always want your team to be on top of their game. And, like, if I'm St. Louis, you know, like, Chief, to me, did an incredible job all last year and his staff. And, you know, they came out that first game against Chicago. It didn't look like they wanted anything to do with that exhibition game. And, you know, they were better against the Avs. The Avs, to me, are not taking that approach. I think MacKinnon and Bednar have done a great job preparing. And just MacKinnon's quotes about how he thinks they're ready, this is the best team. He's giving confidence. And the way he's playing, obviously, he's giving confidence to everybody around him. And then, you know, St. Louis and Boston in particular look like they have the veteran leadership. They know how to get it done. And I think that they're just continuing looking to amp up because, you know, whether you finish first or third or fourth in that round robin section, in the East, you're going to get a really good team. In the West, I don't think the West is as deep as the East. And I think it's more important in the West. The higher up you finish, the better you might be having easier success in that first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Former Dallas coach Jim Montgomery is our guest. All you're going to get, because if you do get home ice, is last change. Is that a big deal at the end of the day?
You know, if your staff and as a team, you care more about playing to your identity and with emotion, it's not as big of a deal. And especially in this environment, it's not as big of a deal. I think we see it a little bit. You guys were talking about it. And the word that comes to mind to me is it's sterile. The interviews are sterile. The lack of seeing crowd is sterile. And just the, you know, it's great. You hear a lot of people calling for pucks and helping each other out. But it just resonates how sterile the buildings are. Without what we're all used to and the passion and emotion that comes with that in playoff hockey.
For the crazy noise that you normally see in a playoff, either home or the road, Monty, is it easier to manage a bench in this environment as a coach to actually communicate and now the players can't pretend they can't hear what you're saying?
By far. And if you're a loud coach behind the bench, you know, it really, no player has an excuse to hide somewhere with what you just said.
We saw Montreal get too many men on the ice penalties. How do you explain that?
You know, I just think that's, you know, again, getting back to game form. And you see it, I think if you look at the regular season, most too many men happen in those first 5 to 10 games than they do later on. And I've seen it not only in Montreal, but I've seen it a lot. Like Winnipeg had one yesterday, and there's been more than you would expect. But again, line changes and when to change at the proper time. There's a lot of things that, as simple as it is, there's a lot of things that need to be ironed out. And players not being in game shape or as being as sharp as they need to be, and coaches themselves, you know, maybe having a line ready when someone is a changes quickly for whatever reason. A lot of guys are, like when I was in Dallas and Cogliano came to our team, I mean, what a great pro he is and loved coaching him, but he is a 28-second shift guy. And if you don't know that, it catches you by surprise sometimes, especially when you're on the road, and you're trying to wait as long as possible. I mean, at home, not on the road. You're waiting as long as possible to see who the other team might be coming with if you're matching.
And to that, when you watch Montreal, I think they had the problem during the regular season. They also had practices in whatever phase to get ready. I'm watching their bench and watching Pittsburgh, Monty, and I know it's a trend. Is four coaches an awful lot to have on a bench as far as trying to, I guess, keep everybody busy, but at the same time communicate between everyone?
You know, I think that really comes down to the head coach's comfort level. You know, does he want a lot of feedback? Is he someone that paces a lot behind? Because once you get four guys there, there's not as much room to walk back and forth. I liked having more people behind there because I liked a lot of information coming to me. You know, but it just depends on the individual.
With Jim Montgomery, former NHL coach, you talked about Connor McDavid. How do you defend against that guy?
You got to get him in the offensive zone. You know, if you, like when we would play against Connor McDavid, we would try on the forecheck. It would be two guys going hard at their D and the third guy picking up Connor. We'd leave the walls open because, you know, once he gets it, same thing with McKinnon. Once those guys, they come down low to their own goal line, they get that, they get two steps. They get half a step. It's too many steps. So you got to be in on them before they get going or else, you know, your defenseman, like, you can look at Olimata and say he got burned, but, I mean, who's going to stop that yesterday?
Yeah, no, I look at that. And to your point, is it really at the end of the day through the neutral zone? There's no way it's going to be the defenseman. I mean, the forward has to turn and come with him. Otherwise, forget it.
Yeah, he's got to at least deflect him to the boards out of the middle of the ice, so that the defenseman can get a good gap and proper angle and only give him one opportunity. But if he gets the middle of the ice, just like any, the same thing with Sidney Crosby, he gets the middle of the ice on you, you're in trouble.
You talked a little bit about that defense pair for Columbus that shut down the Leafs in game one. That relies a bit upon your ability to line match. If you're Sheldon Keefe in the Toronto Maple Leafs, do you try to get Auston Matthews while you have last change for tonight's game or today's game? Do you try to get him away, or do you just say, hey, Auston Matthews is going to play his 22, 23, 24 minutes, and I've got Tavares in the number two hole. I'm comfortable just playing those guys, just making sure they get enough minutes.
Well, you know, you can do all you want. There's only so many a handful of times as a coach. Even if you have home ice, it's just off changes. Can you make that happen? And if you're not winning faceoffs, you know, as soon as Columbus gets the puck across their own blue line, those two D-men are changing, and they're getting their matchup anyways. So you got to get that same response that McDavid had. You know, the Leafs' best forwards got to find a way. And, you know, Columbus did a great job of clogging up the middle of the ice. Now the Leafs have to refuse to be denied getting to those tough areas.
When you look at the matchups as well, Monty, for a player, first of all, attention to detail also takes a lot of players out of their rhythm. Does a modern-day NHL player, can he do that old school, or do a lot of them just want to get out on the ice when it's their designated time? And as JR pointed out, hey, whatever the matchup is, I just want to get into a rhythm.
Yeah, rhythm is important. And your best players, you know, when they start feeling it, and that comes with a lot of reps, you know, they get in a rhythm of the game. I think you see that with Columbus, you know, with Aho, who is just so good, and Svechnikov. They got two dynamic young forwards that, as a coach, you look at them, you're, God, they play the game the right way. They're hard back, they're hard on the forecheck, they're relentless on the puck, and then they have the ability to make special plays. And once they get in a rhythm like they did yesterday, they can take over games.
With former coach Jim Montgomery, speaking of getting in rhythm, it was obvious that Mike Sullivan wanted to do that last night for Pittsburgh, because Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, essentially, he just kept rolling those guys out there early in the game in an effort to get that first goal and kind of get over that Carey Price bump. Do you believe that Carey Price in any way was in Pittsburgh's head after one game?
No, I don't. I think Pittsburgh is such a veteran, confident team, and, you know, Sully's a great coach, and I think they just believe that they weren't gritty enough, that they weren't getting the dirty areas enough, and I'm not sure. I only saw a period last night, so I don't know if they did that significantly that much better of a job. I think what Pittsburgh's biggest concern is going to be not letting the power play become a distraction for their five-on-five play, because the carryover from your best players, who are usually your best offensive players, not getting frustrated with the lack of success on the power play carrying over to their effectiveness five-on-five.
How good has Carolina been, and not just this year, but last year? How much respect do you have for them and Coach Rob Brind'Amour?
Immense. I mean, that team is so hard to play against. Columbus did the same thing. Columbus played a perfect game against Toronto, checking-wise. And Carolina, I thought that was a hard matchup. And when I look at, you know, what could David Quinn have done different? Like, I think David Quinn's coached a great series. I loved his post-game press conference after game one. I thought he tried to switch up his top two lines at the, you know, right time yesterday. He called a timeout at the right time when it went 3-1. You just look at it, 5-on-5. The Rangers are getting a great experience here playing in the playoffs with a real young team that's going to be reckoned with in the future. You just got a Carolina team that has the most mobile decor, and they're missing Pesci and Hamilton, so look out when they come back supposedly for round two. And then you have Rod Brind'Amour, who I think his players love playing for, that gets his players to play on their toes, and they put other teams on their heels. And I think you're seeing that. 5-on-5, they've been incredibly dominant.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of players from your former team, the Dallas Stars. Tyler Seguin and Jason Dickinson, both before the game with Vegas yesterday, took a knee during the anthem. Are you surprised at all with those two players in particular that they did what they did yesterday?
No, I'm not. They are both, very caring and sensitive people. And what I mean by sensitive is, you know, Tyler is a person that really tries to include everyone. He would hate it if he knew anyone in the world was unhappy with him as a person. And I think he's just a very giving person. And Jason Dickinson's the same way, but different. No one knows his brand like they do Tyler's. But he's a person that is very sensitive and cares a lot about doing the right thing, and I applaud both of them for what they did.
As far as watching the hockey itself, do you like the presentation? Have you been a little surprised, I guess, three games on the same sheet ice, how that's kind of held up? And I guess just overall quality of the play?
Yeah, I think that, the play has been, some teams have been incredible. Some teams, I think, are still trying to find their way. I think the quality of the ice has been good considering how much hockey is on it, but you do see a lot of bouncing pucks. You don't see a lot of flat pucks, and that's to be expected. And I think everybody's dealing with the same ice, so they have to move past that ordeal.
All right, good stuff. Six games today. How many are we marking you down for?
Four. I got to take the boys out, hit some golf balls, or do something with them. I got to be a dad at some point, or else I think I'm going to get thrown out of home.
We hear you. We hear you. You're no different than anybody else. Listen, great insight, as always. Really appreciate the time and look forward to chatting with you again down the road.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, you too. There's Jim Montgomery, former coach of the Dallas Stars, joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today.
Yeah, and obviously he follows you on Twitter because he went right at that Seth Jones-Werenski one. So there you were. It's funny, though. Like, there's a guy that coached, I didn't even ask. We were just texting before the show and kind of leading in, and, you know, that was the part that I don't want to say, it's just kind of amazing that, again, he's in the Western Conference. You don't see them all the time. That people, these are two studs, but again, it's funny how when, it's like Erik Karlsson, when all of a sudden playoff or play-in comes in, the whole world is focusing on you, and all of a sudden people are like, wow, didn't see that as much.
Yeah, well, you're watching in the playoffs, you're watching teams you don't normally, when they're playing your favorite team or your hometown team or whatever, you might watch that game, but you're really watching your team. When you're kind of dispassionate about it,
yeah,
and you just watch it as a hockey fan, you're kind of, your eyes sort of open to the fact of, man, these guys are really good hockey players.
Yeah, and a couple things. One is that as we get away from the play-in and you get down to the 8-8, I think we'll see some even better hockey and that we'll only have a couple of games a day. But I will say that, JR, to your point, like for a lot of general managers, you're so wrapped up in your own team. The ability right now to be in a bubble, to watch your own team and everybody else and at the same time on TV, boy, there's a ton of scouting and probably a ton of general managers that are like, wow, I didn't realize that such and such was this good. Or, you know, like I say, there's a lot of focus on these players right now, and that probably will carry over into free agency.
Yep, great point. And again, we'll kick it off today at noon with Pageot and the Islanders taking on Hoffman and the Panthers. Arizona and Nashville is the 2:30 game. The Leafs game is at 4 today versus Columbus. Then it's the Flames and Jets at 6:45. The late game is Minnesota and Vancouver. And which game have I forgotten? Because I know I have in the mix.
One other, it's not the play-in though, right? It's one of the whatever.
Yeah. That's why I didn't.
The exhibition games. I don't even track them on my schedule. No. It's just like I don't not feeling that at all. Unless you're just a passionate fan of one of those teams,
yeah.
I don't know why you'd have any interest to watch.
Now I know why. I left it right off my list. All right, yeah. Well, I'll figure it out. Not that it really matters. All right, 9:31. We'll take a break. Come back. We'll look at some of these this day in sports history. Celebrate some sports birthdays as well. As we continue along, leading you up to 10 o'clock, A.J. Jakubek, Graham Creech will take over in the box. Ian and Lee are on the drive this afternoon at 2. And we got Blackjacks basketball for you tonight. They can clinch a playoff spot in the summer series with a win. That'll tip off at 7:30 right here on TSN 1200. Okay, yeah, it was the 8 o'clock game tonight. So there are actually none of the round-robin games today. These are all the play-in series. So 6 of the 8 play-in series. We'll resume today with, again, Carolina looking to eliminate the New York Rangers. Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. How many of these play-in series will go the full 5 games when it's all said and done? Is it 0, 1 or 2, 3 to 4, 5 to 6, or 7 and or 8? Simmer, where do you come down? You've had a chance to see all of the 16 teams involved in the play-in series. How many are going the full five?
I'm going to go 1 to 2, 3 to 4. I'm going to go, I'll go 3 to 4. I don't feel that Pittsburgh or the Rangers series, which is obvious with where Carolina's at, but I just wouldn't be shocked if close to the rest. So I'll go 3 to 4 as a conservative approach, but wouldn't be surprised if it's a little more than that.
All right. Bunda.
Oof, tough, but I do see some teams bouncing back pretty good, so I'm going to go with 5 to 6.
Okay, I see. I'm on the fence between the two.
Okay,
so
4.5.
Zero or
0 or 8. Yeah.
I hope that we get to and I guess the obvious. I don't even know if I guess Pittsburgh, Montreal going to a game 5 would be some exciting. Could they knock them off? The big pressure point one for me right off the hop would be if a Columbus Toronto gets to that. Then for whatever fan you are, you're a fan of Calgary. If it's Winnipeg, what I'm curious watching today, JR, is just Winnipeg and Calgary look like they're already both have gone 3 months of the playoffs. I just wonder. They really do. I'm wondering in a back to back where a lot of these athletes, no matter how good you took care of yourself, you're waking up. And even for Matthew Tkachuk, I didn't think it was going to come back after that kind of ankle-on-ankle with Ehlers.
Yep.
I thought he had actually hurt himself. I wonder how he's feeling waking up today trying to get going.
The crazy thing is, so both Calgary and Winnipeg, that series, and the Carolina Rangers series will both have 3 games in the books before Minnesota-Vancouver plays their second game.
But such is
the way it is. You know, you got to play 5, and it'll all be over by Sunday.
Yeah.
Because on Monday, somebody's getting Alexis Lafreniere a week from yesterday.
Yeah.
The ultimate payoff if you're a first-round loser.
It would be an honor for sure.
Thank you, Alexi. He's going. He's going to know where he's going as of next Monday night.
Yeah, and there are teams that you look at kind of way they're set up from a Vancouver to the Rangers, and I think AJ had brought up one more yesterday, JR, where you could just totally understand. Now, I don't know if the ownership in Vancouver wants to hear it, but if I'm the New York Rangers, this could not play out any better than getting a little playoff experience. We aren't able to use our young goaltender, but for where we're at as a franchise, a 1-8 chance, and if they ever landed Lafreniere along with the young core that they have right now, you'd just be absolutely thrilled versus winning and maybe getting knocked off by somebody in the first round.
Simmer, though, the NHL would hate that. To have a potential superstar player in New York,
that's true.
Not going to let that
happen. That's a good point. No, they're looking at that and thinking, no,
we'd rather have him in Minnesota.
Oh, he got Panthers written all over him. Hey, where do the French Canadians like to go the most, right?
And
you got Huberdeau, now we got Lafreniere.
Were you right? And when you said the is Crosby the last Quebec League player to go number one overall?
Yeah. It was what was the same? Now Rimouski will end up having three after having Lecavalier.
Yes,
correct. Crosby and that, right?
Yeah, Lecavalier was 98, Crosby was 05, and Lafreniere is 2020.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, what franchise maybe needs the most saving in its own home market right now?
Yeah,
Florida Panthers.
Yeah,
you may be onto something there.
There you go. I'm you're way more better at the draft. Was Nathan McKinnon a second pick overall, or was he first?
No, he was first.
Okay, and Colorado. Then Durant was second. So that would be...
I think Durant was third, actually, to Tampa.
Was he? Okay, yeah. Okay.
That was Seth Jones was fourth.
Little Barkov action?
Barkov was number two. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
2013.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a couple of very nice players. All right, so let us know what you think at tsn1200.ca. How many of these play-in series are going to go the full five games? Quick update on where we're at with the CFL, CP, and TSN's Dave Naylor confirming that the league has now asked the Canadian government for an interest-free loan of $30 million. The league had been offered a business development loan of $40 million, which included higher interest rates and fees on top of that. They turned that down. They've now asked for less money, but they want it interest-free. So that is the latest ask from the CFL. And as we've talked about so much over the last few weeks, decision time has to be coming soon for many different reasons as to whether there's going to be an abbreviated CFL season.
Yeah, and behind the scenes for, well, our company, TSN, wonder with a void of programming, depending what they're in on. And I don't know enough about the schedule, JR, from I know they split the Raptors games to NFL. I know there's a lot, but how much would they be looking at this and saying, you know what, this is worthwhile for the investment? And on the surface, to me, for a Canadian entity and nine teams, including a league office, this seems pretty reasonable. Kind of like to see how it's going to all come about, but to put on a product where maybe there's not any profit, but at least some forward progress, something on TV, players get a little money in their pocket, teams are okay for the following year. I like it. I hope it's able to work.
All right. Let's get to some This Day in Sports History, shall we? For this August the 4th, there were a couple of sort of very memorable things that happened that you would well know of, and they actually happened on this August the 4th, including today was the day in 1983 that Dave Winfield, while throwing the ball around, hit the seagull, killed the seagull, and eventually was charged by the OPP with animal cruelty. That happened on this day in 1983.
Didn't he have to donate a painting and some money?
Oh, exactly. Hey? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he was playing for the Yankees at that point.
Whatever, what did Randy Johnson ever do? Right?
Yeah.
That bird, actually, the fact that they couldn't find the bird, he just exploded. God. There was nothing left.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
On this day in 1984, Carl Lewis won the 100 meters at the LA Olympics, the first of nine Olympic gold medals that he would win between the sprints, the relays, and, of course, the long jump that he was also very good at. You know what I don't know?
What?
I know that Ben Johnson was stripped of his gold in the 88 Olympics, quite famously.
Yeah.
Who ended up getting the gold medal now? I was going to look that up last night and I forgot.
Well, that's a great question. I mean...
Was it Linford Christie? I want to say Linford Christie.
Okay. Would he have been? Okay, that makes sense. And then would Carl Lewis have gotten the silver?
Because he ended up being Carl Lewis.
Because it was Ben Johnson that looked over, and was he not putting the finger up to Carl Lewis as he was putting up the number one?
I think so.
Yeah, and also on social media yesterday, which was pretty cool, was the anniversary of the 96 4x100 that Canada won in Atlanta. Pretty proud moment that was.
Hey? That was that's a great piece of video, by the way, and I know you and many people shared it yesterday.
Yeah.
It's kind of a, and there's no commentary. It's just the buzz of the crowd, but it's just the four. So it's Robert Esme, Ottawa's own Glenroy Gilbert,
Bernie Sorin,
yeah. and then Donovan Bailey, and it's great. The handoff from Bruni Sorin to Donovan Bailey, as Bruni Sorin is kind of jogging it out, as soon as the handoff is complete, he puts up his hand like, we've won this.
Yeah.
As soon as you completed the handoff, they knew they'd won.
And that side view of, and even back to 96, the unique running style that Michael Johnson had, where it just looks like his legs, when you see that side view of Donovan Bailey, it doesn't look like he's touching the ground, right?
Yeah.
And how forward his leg motion is versus his upper body, as a Canadian, who doesn't love that? That was a beautiful moment. First time ever that the United States had not won the 4x100.
I gotta say, I the 4x100 is one of the most even the lead up, like the semis leading up to the final, that's one of the most exciting events that happens during the Olympics.
It, not only exciting, but how many times teams end up dropping the baton, right?
Yes,
like
exactly.
some of the world class teams, like that. As you're a Canadian fan, you're not even looking at the race. By the time you get to the final handoff, you're just praying, and you know what the athletes are just like. Okay, you make sure this is a secure exchange, right? That hey, I'm handing this. We practice this a zillion times. Let's not drop it and lose it on that.
Yeah, Carl Lewis won the gold. He took it over for Linford Christie. He was silver, and Calvin Smith bronze.
And because he's not in Lance Armstrong, JR, and officially been caught with stuff, to me, he's easily my most likable athlete of all time. Do you have him on your short list?
Carl Lewis?
Oh, he just is just one of the most arrogant. Like, yeah. That
uh-oh.
Oh, man. What?
No.
Oh.
Remember the famous...
Oh, the singing of the anthem? Oh,
the anthem.
I know, yeah. But everything, like his arrogance, University, I think Houston he came out of, had the one track coach in the documentary there that has a scrapbook about everything he did his whole life. It was just so easy to hate the American.
On this day in 1989, Dave Steeb of the Blue Jays retired the first 26 batters he faced before giving up two hits in what eventually would be a 2-1 win over the Yankees. The previous year... he had taken two no-hitters into the ninth inning with two outs and lost them both. That's why I believe the name of his book is Tomorrow I'll Be Perfect, right?
Oh, okay.
Dave Steeb,
when it was all
said and done.
No, and hey, I guess growing up, Dave Steeb and Steve Rogers. I think Rogers is a little bit older than Dave Steeb, but those are the faces of the Canadian pitching staff, so some great teams.
Speaking of very memorable moments on this day in 1993, Nolan Ryan buzzed Robin Ventura of the Chicago White Sox with a pitch. Robin Ventura made the very unwise decision of going out and deciding to get into a fight with 46-year-old Nolan Ryan, who grabs him in a headlock and proceeds to feed him six straight uppercuts.
Yeah, that was classic. And just a man's man, right? I mean, just kind of at that age. This is when you get to that age as a teenager, Bunda, or anybody else, where you're going to throw down with your dad. Like, you just, you know, you think you can... but then you realize when you get in there, no, I'm in trouble.
It was more
here.
Of a noogie than anything, right? Like, it was a couple uppercuts, but it looked a lot more like he just kind of fed him and said, here you go, I'll noogie you now, just to embarrass you even more.
It just looks great, though.
Yeah, absolutely. On this day in 1995, the Ottawa Senators obtained defenseman Steve Duchesne from the St. Louis Blues in exchange for a second-round draft pick, and of course it would be Steve Duchesne a couple of seasons later that would score the only goal in a win over Buffalo. They clinched the first-ever playoff spot for the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, and that was, and I don't know what the contract looked at the time, JR. I'm assuming that St. Louis must have picked up a bit of dough. That was a cleaning up in the mess in St. Louis, basically a Mike Keenan of the crazy contracts that he had handed out. And Duchesne came in here after being very good in L.A. and it was a very serviceable play for Ottawa.
Also on that very same day in 1995, probably a trade that made more headlines, the Edmonton Oilers got Curtis Joseph and Mike Greer from the St. Louis Blues in exchange for two first-round draft picks in 96 and 97. I guess more money going out the door, right?
Yeah, it was more craziness as well. And somehow that's interlinked to Shane Corson and just the mass chaos of Mike Keenan. And had Mike Greer at the end of his career, played at Boston University. Oh, man, one of the most likable characters of all time and was a hell of a warrior for the Edmonton Oilers and for Cujo. Came in and stabilized things in goal and always fun to watch.
On this day in 2005, the LA Kings got center Jeremy Roenick in a trade with the Philadelphia Flyers. He only ended up playing 1 year in L.A. before signing with Phoenix as a free agent. I have no memory of Jeremy Roenick playing with the L.A. Kings.
Yeah, zero. I don't remember. I remember more about San Jose and calling out Patrick Marleau. His time in Chicago, very memorable. And his time in Phoenix, what I probably remember most was they had some playoff series with Joel Quenneville in St. Louis. He was Jim Schoenfeld, the main coach, and just off the charts physical. And for Jeremy Roenick at his size, and for you think of him at the points he put up, man, would he lay it on the line physically come playoff time? He was a treat to watch.
Sports birthdays. Born on this day, John Riggins of the Washington football team is turning 71 years old today. Not sure what John Riggins is up to, speaking of man's man.
No, and you think about a power back, and was it the Raiders Super Bowl where he basically dragged the guy?
Yep.
You know, he just was your classic, hey, short yardage, what are you going to do? Face of the Washington Redskins, just old school football, and boy, oh boy, was he popular with the old Washington football team in the District of Columbia.
Yep, turning 64 today is Jerry Cooney, who became, of course, a regular at the Ringside for Youth Boxing Tournament here in Ottawa, right? Every single year.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to, I'm sure you did, interview him a couple of times. We'd go over there for the show with Ian. What a great guy, and what a guy, and wanting to sell, coming in and talking, and I wouldn't even want to say loves himself, but that's the energy. When you're putting on an event and you want something, he is larger than life, and what a good guy.
Mary Decker turns 62 today, believe it or not. Of course, an American track star. She had the big rivalry with Zola Budd, the barefoot runner from South Africa. And of course, Mary Decker ended up getting tripped in that one Olympic Games, either inadvertently or on purpose. Yeah. Not quite sure.
Yeah.
But the famous shot of her sitting in the infield with, you know, kind of crying with her arms out as you can see the rest of the runners running down the track. Very famous Olympic photograph.
Yeah, very Nancy Kerrigan-esque. And was it Mary Decker Tab at the time, or was the Tab coming later?
Sure.
That was the name. And that was just that. And hey, everybody, the Olympics at that time, even still, it's all about the United States. So it really doesn't matter whether you tried or not. You have taken a gold medal away from an American, and you should pay for it.
Rocket Roger Clemens is turning 58 today. Won the Cy Young Award 7 times, 354 career wins. Of course, had a couple of great years with the Blue Jays. Started with the Red Sox, ended up there with the Yankees for a while.
Yeah.
Did the old circle of life, and now it's just kind of fallen off the radar screen.
Yeah, nobody really wants to hear from you. Not very well liked when he was good, and after getting caught, forget about it. I do still wonder, what was the other famous Yankees pitcher that was caught at the same time? I apologize.
Andy Pettit.
How Andy Pettit slid through this, I really do believe, Jay, at the end of the day, speaks to more popularity with the media. Like, Andy was a well-liked guy. Mike Messina, well-liked guy. In the case of Roger Clemens, like Barry Bonds, too many people hate you. And when they hate you and something bad happens, they're going to come after you.
It is not a very nice 23rd birthday for Mike Soroka. We've told this story a couple times already today. Today's his birthday. Last night, the Atlanta Braves, a pitcher who's from Calgary, had a great rookie season last year, tore his Achilles. He's out for the year.
Yeah.
So not a happy birthday for
Mike
Soroka.
And you look at KD, you go back to the documentary on Kobe Bryant. Boy, oh boy, you can work back from it. Not easy to do. And man, you're thinking about probably another year before he's able to pitch. So very sad.
Hockey birthdays are very slim today. Only 11 players who ever played a game in the NHL were born on this day. And only two of note, and one of them is because he's from Ottawa, Nick Baptiste.
Yeah.
Turning 25. He actually ended up playing last year with the Belleville Senators for a bit. Was a former third-round pick of the Buffalo Sabres. Probably reaching toward the end of trying to get himself an NHL gig, I guess. Seattle will start next year, but did play in the Sens organization.
Yeah,
this past year.
And certainly coming out of junior, right? I mean, pretty heralded, pretty exciting, and thought, you know, kind of there. And just shows you how one phase to get drafted, another phase to get a contract. It's a whole other phase to try to make it in the NHL as a full-time player.
All right, so there may not be a lot of notable NHLers born in this day, but there is one exception.
Okay.
Rocket Richard was born in this day in 1921. First player, of course, to score 50 goals in a season, did it in 50 games, scored 20 goals for 14 consecutive years, leading the league in goals 5 times, 544 career goals, which at the time was the most in NHL history, 8 Stanley Cups, passed away in the year 2000.
Yeah, and probably best known for, is it the Grecian formula?
Yeah, just a touch of gray. Just a touch.
Yeah, that's
probably
just
more known for the eyes.
No, a couple of famous, I guess we have what the Rocket Richard riots. And then one of the more famous clips or books that I had as a kid was him shaking hands, I think, with the Boston Bruins and the blood coming down the
Sugar
side of his face.
Jim Henry.
Is that what it was?
The goalie, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's just such a great photo. Yeah, he's got the blood coming down from his, he's got the two black eyes, right? Or maybe they're not black, but they look black.
Oh, no. Right? And I don't know what it is about the, well, the,
and he's kind of leaning over, and it's a fantastic photo.
Well, in those old photos, obviously, first thing you notice, there's no glass, so it's going to be different. You notice how everybody's dressed up, but this incredible lighting that they were able to do that showed the players and the crowd, and hey, for us growing up, when you didn't have a whole lot of video, you just combed through these books and all these famous pictures, and certainly he was part of it.
The Robber Baron says Mary Decker Slaney. Is the name you're looking for. Now that I see that, it's like, yeah, when you said Tab, it's like, I didn't remember Tab.
Okay.
But I don't follow my sports celebrity birthday.
That might have been one of her.
Was it twice?
Might have been one of her sponsors.
Okay. Sponsor, husband, one or the other. Exactly. Or she agreed to change her name to get a sponsorship, maybe.
For sure, for sure.
All right, so how many games are you watching today? You watching Florida Islanders?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll watch that. I'll be...
What are the must-watches?
Yeah.
Columbus-Toronto?
Columbus-Toronto. Oh, absolutely. Start to finish that. I'll tune in a little bit Arizona. Question late enough. I wonder if Minnesota, because the way they were playing, if we're not giving them enough kind of... Are they the Columbus of the West, you know, as far as the style that they end up playing? But no, for sure the noon and the 4 o'clock, and then we'll see from there.
Yep. Calgary-Winnipeg is a 6:45 game. We'll see if Carolina can eliminate the Rangers tonight at 8. And then the late game, for those of you going wire-to-wire, is Minnesota-Vancouver. That one is at 10:45. So we're looking at best-case scenario, what, a 1:30 wrap for that one,
yeah,
if there's no
yeah,
overtimes?
Yeah.
All right, whatever you're up to, enjoy all the games today, everybody.